This is Captain Rick reporting. I'm back with part two of the Friday, May 27th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. I said May 28th for part one. Sorry about that. I'll be starting with the obituaries. Beulah A. Brinkman, no comas. Beulah A. Brinkman, 92 of no comas, died 4:58 p.m. Monday, May 23rd, in Hillsboro Hospital. Services will be noon Saturday in United Church of Christ, Almond, with Edmund Hill and Jimmy Barker officiating. Visitation will be 10:30 a.m. until services in the church. Burial will be in Almond Cemetery. Max R. Cowgill, Decatur. Max R. Cowgill, 82 of Decatur, passed away on Tuesday, May 24th, in his home. Graveside service to celebrate Max's life will be 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 31st, in Camp Butler National Cemetery, with military honors conducted by the Inter-Veterans Burial Detail of Sangamon County. The family of Max R. Cowgill is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home in Decatur. Ronald Donaldson, Decatur. Ronald Donaldson, 67, departed this life on Monday, May 23rd, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Service, 3 p.m. Friday, May 27th, at St. Peter AME Church, with visitation 1 hour before service. Walker Funeral Service is in charge of the arrangements. Bernietta Jordan, Decatur. Bernietta M. Jordan, 101, of Decatur, passed away 3:26 a.m. Wednesday, May 25th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Private family services will be held Friday, May 27th, with burial to follow in Calvary Cemetery in Decatur. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to the Activity Fund at Fair Havens Christian Home, 1790 South Fairview Avenue, Decatur, 62521, where she resided for the past 7 years. The family of Bernietta M. Jordan is being served by the Morin and Goble Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Decatur. Lloyd R. Rowland, Decatur. Lloyd R. P.J. Rowland, 94 of Decatur, passed away at 10:19 Tuesday, May 24th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, May 31st, in Point Pleasant Cemetery, Long Creek. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, is assisting the family with services. Memorials may be made to the Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois Charitable Fund. Charvis DeMonte Sandridge, Decatur. Charvis DeMonte Dandridge, 37, of Decatur, departed this life on Wednesday, May 18th, at St. John's Hospital, Springfield. Services celebrating his life will be held 12 noon Saturday at Life Changers Church, with visitation 1 hour before service. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Carolyn Marie Fraley, Pena. Carolyn Marie Fraley, 80, Pena, died Monday, May 23rd. Services, 10:30 a.m. Friday, McCracken Dean Funeral Home, Pena. Visitation, 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday, with 8 p.m. Delta Theta Tau rites. Burial, Linwood Cemetery, Pena. Memorials, Heritage Healthcare Activity Fund, or Delta Theta Tau Sorority, Pena. Following are funerals pending for today. Virginia Hawes, 87, Clinton, died Thursday, May 26, Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton. John E. Hess, 66, Decatur, died Thursday, May 26th, Walker Funeral Services and Chapel. Ruth E. Medor, 92, Chesterfield, Missouri, formerly of Mount Zion, died Wednesday, May 25th. Following are funerals scheduled for today. Betty Lee Bandy, 90, Arcola, 10:30 a.m. in Arcola Cemetery. Ronald Donaldson, 67, Decatur, 3 p.m. in St. Peter A.M.E. Church. Carolyn Marie Fraley, 80, Pena, 10:30 a.m., McCracken Dean Funeral Home, Pena. Warren Lane, 87, Sullivan, 11 a.m., in Elam Springs Church of Jesus Christ, Sullivan. Lois E. Owens, 89, Decatur, 7 p.m. in Antioch Christian Church. Jeanette E. Schnepper, 93, Decatur, 11 a.m. in Morin and Goebel Funeral Home. Bill Stevenson, 76, Clinton, 10 a.m. in St. John's Catholic Church, Clinton, and Shelby Ann Tate, 32, Sullivan, 6 p.m. in McMullen Young Funeral Home, Sullivan. Back to the news. The first article is entitled, Decatur, Illinois Sees Rise in Unemployment Rates. Decatur. The statewide trend of higher unemployment rates continued in April, with Decatur perilously close to becoming the worst in Illinois. For the first time in 6 years, every county in Illinois saw an increase in the unemployment rate in this April, according to Illinois Department of Employment Security statistics released Thursday. Decatur was no exception, as its April unemployment rate was 7.1%, a 1.2% increase for this time last year. The rate is the second highest in the state, just below Danville's 7.5% unemployment rate. A major factor across the state has been an increasing number of people in the workforce who are unable to find jobs, said Ron Payne, a labor market analyst with the department. What has set Decatur apart from its fellow metro areas is its reliance on manufacturing and creating parts to be sold on the global market. Until the global economy rebounds, there will be issues in Decatur, Payne said. Those who want to enter the workforce are encouraged by those like Payne to visit the Workforce Investment Solutions of Macon and DeWitt counties, which connects people with thousands of jobs available in the central Illinois area, as well as connections to certain types of training necessary for in-demand jobs. The total number of non-farm jobs in Decatur dropped by 500 from last year, while there was a payroll increase of 200 in educational and health services and 100 in wholesale trade. There was a payroll reduction of 300 in construction, 200 in warehousing and utilities, and 100 in financial activities, manufacturing, and other services. The statewide unemployment rate for April was 6.2%, up 0.8% from a year ago. Similar increases were recorded elsewhere in central Illinois, as the April unemployment rate in Christian County was 6.3% and 5.6% a year ago, in Coles County 6.4% and 5.1%, in DeWitt 6.1% and 4.6%. In Douglas, 5% and 4.1%. In Effingham, 4.9% and 4.1%. In Fayette, 6.5% and 5.4%. In Logan, 5.5% and 4.6%. In Moultrie, 5% and 3.6%. In Piatt, 5.1% and 4%. And in Shelby, 6.1% and 4.9%. The next article is entitled, On Business, Crekles West Reopens in New Building. Todd Teal was determined to make the move into a new building as smooth as possible so customers could avoid a prolonged disruption from getting their Crekles fix of burgers, fries, and ice cream. Crekles West finished relocating earlier this week into a new 3,000-square-foot freestanding building at 1425 North Oakland Avenue, complete with a drive-through window. It had previously been located just to the south inside the Colonial Mall. Owner Todd Teal said the process of building the first Crekles in Decatur from the ground up has been entirely worthwhile. We're trying to keep the Crekles tradition alive that my grandpa built, Teal said. We'll keep doing it in the way we've always done it. Founder Bill Crekles opened the first restaurant in 1953, and Crekles currently has four other locations in Decatur and Mount Zion. Teal said the only new addition at this time to Crekles West menu is a grilled chicken sandwich, but more changes could be phased in later. In the meantime, he said, it will focus on providing the tasty food it's come to be known for, complete with the added convenience of the drive-through and outdoor covered patio seating. Teal has been grateful for the support that the business has received from throughout the community during the construction process. Signs still need to go up on the new building, along with a few other finishing touches, before the changes are complete, he said. Lobby hours are 10:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m., with the drive-through staying open until 10 a.m. Monday through Saturday. The business is closed Sundays. To reach them, call 217-362-0121. The next article is entitled, State Police Announces Traffic Safety Initiative, Springfield. Illinois State Police have joined a national initiative aimed at reducing fatalities on highways. Authorities say the agency will beef up patrols on portions of Interstate 80 to monitor for speeding, driving under the influence, distracted driving, and seatbelt compliance. The effort is planned for Monday evening. Police say I-80 is the second longest interstate highway in the country. It spans more than 160 miles through Illinois. State police will join in the 20-state National Highway Transportation Safety Administration effort called Click It or Ticket Border to Border Operation. The next article is entitled, Amtrak Seeks Developer for Chicago Union Station Overhaul. Chicago. Amtrak is seeking a developer for a new phase of its overhaul of Chicago's Union Station. The railroad announced a request for qualifications with a July 1st deadline. Amtrak wants a developer to overhaul the commercial elements of the 91-year-old station and neighboring properties in Chicago's rapidly developing West Loop neighborhood. That includes 1.3 billion square feet of building space spread over more than 14 acres and air rights to develop another 3 million square feet of office space above it all. Amtrak Vice President of Infrastructure Development, Stephen Gardner, says the goal is to turn Union Station into a world-class transportation facility that is further woven into the fabric of the city. Union Station is the country's third busiest rail terminal. About 120,000 passengers pass through it daily. The next article is entitled, Man Guilty of Buying Indiana Guns, Selling Them in Chicago. Chicago. An Indianapolis man has been found guilty of dealing firearms from a porch on Chicago's west side. Willie Lee Biles Jr. was found guilty on federal charges of dealing firearms without a license. Prosecutors alleged the 44-year-old Biles would regularly make trips from Indiana, where he bought guns from a licensed dealer, to Chicago. According to the U.S. Justice Department news release, Biles would sell the weapons for 2 to 3 times the price he paid for them. It said Biles never asked for identification, and he failed to verify whether buyers could legally possess firearms. Authorities say seven of the firearms Biles sold were later recovered by law enforcement in the Chicago area. U.S. District Judge Sarah Ellis scheduled Biles' sentencing hearing for November 16th. And now, a column entitled The Value of True Grit. Chicago. Education policy wonks have been hearing the gospel of grit as evangelized by Angela Duckworth for years now. Her promise that academic success can be attributed to a child's tolerance for the hard work of persevering through the frustrating learning stage to mastery was popularized in Paul Toll's book, How Children Succeed. Now, in her own book, Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance, Duckworth fleshes out the concept so it can be applied to any endeavor. She explains that using grit to achieve a major life goal, anything from completing college to becoming a working artist, finding the cure to a disease, or winning the Super Bowl or Olympics, means combining passion, practice, purpose, and hope. The point of her emphasis on grit is that it replaces the common belief that innate talent or even genius is what makes high performers successful. Duckworth believes that this is incorrect assumption about the otherness of high achievement that leads people to put self-imposed limitations on themselves unnecessarily. This is helpful. Understanding that one can achieve these four elements helps open the door to goals that might otherwise feel unattainable. Unfortunately, people who are lacking in grit are likely to also lack one or more of passion, purpose, or hope. That was my thought as I plowed through the many, really too many, examples of people who made it to the top of their disciplines through grit. Duckworth terms them grit paragons. And frankly, the vast catalog gets a little discouraging. However, if you are naturally a diligent worker and can plow through this book, Duckworth addresses how to develop all the necessary qualities. For instance, you'll learn that grit is not merely concentrated practice. It's about working hard on something that's so meaningful to you that you are willing to commit to working on it for many years it will take to master it. This is where the passion, purpose, and hope comes into play. If that level of sacrifice doesn't sound appealing to you, it may be that you haven't yet found something that seems worth that amount of trouble. But once you do, don't make the mistake of thinking you have to be a genius to really go for it. And now, Dear Abby. Dear Abby, give thanks on Memorial Day during a moment of remembrance. Americans are at their best when they unite around a noble purpose. On Memorial Day, that purpose is the national moment of remembrance. On that day, all Americans are asked to pause wherever they are at 3 p.m. local time to honor our fallen. In 1971, No Greater Love, a patriotic organization founded by a woman named Carmela La Spada. It initiated the national moment of remembrance in 1997, which was later established by Congress in 2000. The moment is observed by thousands of Americans at Major League Baseball games across the country. For more than 40 years, the AFL-CIO, North American trade unions, iron workers, sheet metal, air, rail, and transportation workers, along with No Greater Love, have honored our fallen, our troops, our veterans, and their families. Our union members are proud to support the national moment of remembrance. As one nation under God, we should join together to honor those who died for our freedom, each one an American treasure. Eric Dean, General President, International Association of Bridge Structural, Ornamental, and Reinforcing Iron Workers. Dear Mr. Dean, I am aware of the loyal and generous support the unions have given to No Greater Love and the families who have lost beloved family members in wars and military conflicts. For that, I thank you. Readers, it is my sincere hope that you will take a moment from your busy day to join us at 3 p.m. in honoring our fallen military men and women on Memorial Day, Monday, May 30th. Love, Abby. Squeamish. Dear Abby, my mother died in her sleep last year at our home. She was 97. We cleaned the carpets and repainted the room, removed the hospital bed, and replaced it with a brand new one. We recently asked some friends to stay overnight at our house, and they called back to ask if they would be staying in the room Mama had died in. We have a second best guest room, although it's smaller, and so is the bed, full, not a queen. They seemed hesitant. After the call, I found myself feeling offended. I think keeping that, if the shoe was on the other foot, would they shut down a room of their house if someone had died there? We have had other house guests who didn't mind staying in the room. These people are supposed to arrive soon. Should we arrange for them to stay at a hotel? Dear feeling, please don't take their reaction as a personal insult. Many people are squeamish about staying in a room in which someone has died. I see no reason to banish these people to a hotel during their visit. Call them back, offer them the smaller guest room, and enjoy their visit. Toilet seat. Dear Abby, I'm a 77-year-old man. I am not currently involved with a woman, but I have had two marriages and numerous serious affairs. I'd like to know how it became the man's responsibility to put the toilet seat down. Women seem to believe it is written in law, a rule by Emily Post, or one of the Ten Commandments. Flushed in Florida. Dear Flushed, it's all of the above, and I think I know why you have two marriages, numerous serious affairs, and are not currently involved. Have a great rest of the day.